Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. A warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I am the Bill Arnold part of that sentence. Thanks for joining me today. We have a great show coming up in the first hour. Rob Bluey is going to be with me from the Daily Signal, and then Dr. Jeff Myers will be with me as well. He's written a book called The Secret Battle of Ideas About God. So that's all in the first hour. And I do want to start today with a great verse from 1 John chapter 4, verse 4. It says, "But you belong to God, my dear children. You have already won a victory over those people because the spirit who lives in you is greater than the spirit who lives in the world." We have a great day planned. Thanks for listening today. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Rob Bluey will be with us from the Daily Signal.
During the month of November, we often think about reasons to be thankful. And so from all of us at Faith Radio, we want to say a special thanks to you who pray for and give to this ministry. Your gifts do make a difference, and we're so grateful for you. Now, whether your gift is a dollar or a dollar a day, the impact is multiplied and changed lives all across the Upper Midwest and in Hartford and beyond through online listening and the Faith Radio app. We're grateful to have you part of our support team. And on behalf of thousands who benefit from this ministry daily, thank you for your faithfulness. Now, if you're in the category of receiving blessing from Faith Radio and you've heard the right word at the right time, then make this month the time you express thanks for the way God has used this outreach in your life. You can join our support team today with a gift by calling 877-933-2484 and press 2. Or give online at myfaithradio.com. Thanks.
So nice to have you with me today. I'm talking to Rob Bluey. He is the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal and a regular guest on Tuesdays. Always look forward to my chats with Rob, find out what's exactly going on in Washington, D.C. Hello, Rob. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. So we are now coming up on what I believe is called a lame duck Congress.
That is correct. A lame duck Congress is after the voters head to the polls and returning members of Congress, many of whom are not coming back in January, still have some cleanup business to do at the end of the year. And this certainly is a busy lame duck. There is a lot to be done. There are seven government spending bills that need to be passed, or you're going to at least have a partial shutdown of the federal government. And then there are a number of other programs like a farm bill, Violence Against Women Act, various other measures like that that have expiration dates on them that will come due during these next few weeks in the lame duck period before January hits.
So when January hits, there will certainly be an incredible new spirit of cooperation in Congress, right?
Well, if you listen to the politicians in Washington talk, that's what you hear. I think that probably what you're going to see is more gridlock. Anytime you have divided government, in this case, the Democrats will control the U.S. House of Representatives, the Republicans will control the Senate, chances of actually getting legislation through both houses into the president's desk seems unlikely. There will be those moments, though, when you have the rare bipartisan opportunity to work together. I think an example of that might be in the case of criminal justice reform. And there you probably have at least 60 senators, members of both Republican and Democratic parties, who would be willing together to pass something.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from a couple of those issues, there's a lot of divisiveness. I can't imagine, for instance, Republicans and Democrats coming together to do something on a border wall, which, of course, very few Democrats would be willing to support. And likewise, I can't imagine Republicans wanting to address an issue like immigration, where you have a number of the Dreamers who are hoping to get on a path to citizenship in the United States, and many Republicans standing in the way and unwilling to go down that road of amnesty.
Mm-hmm. Do you think infrastructure will come up, and do you think that's a bipartisan issue?
It certainly probably will come up because that is an issue that President Trump and the White House is pushing. Infrastructure is an area dating back to his inauguration, where he was mentioning the opportunity to work together. It took a back seat in this current Congress because of other things such as health care reform, which didn't get done, and tax reform, which did. You have a situation, though, I think, where Democrats see infrastructure as an opportunity to make a big down payment, lots of spending, government spending on projects. That's not necessarily the type of approach that conservatives want to take. And I think that you'll probably have the votes because people like bringing home these projects to their local communities. I think what, as taxpayers, we should hold out for, though, is a responsible approach to how we structure any kind of an infrastructure package. We don't want to have a situation like we did when President Obama first came to office and we had this massive government stimulus bill, which really didn't produce the results that were promised.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I get the feeling, maybe it's just an impression, maybe it's a vague impression, that the Democrats want to just really obstruct because they just hate the president and they want to sort of get in his face and stop anything that he wants. Yet if that is a strategy, I think they're at a disadvantage in 2020 if they don't start legislating.
Well, I think you will see an attempt to do both. I think that the Democrats are working on two different tracks. So they have outlined their policy priorities. They've talked about campaign finance reform being one of them. They've talked about restrictions on the Second Amendment, having to do with guns and firearms. They've also talked about Equality Act, which would do things for the LGBT community. So there are things that the Democrats have. They will introduce legislation, I guess is the best way to put it, and they will try to make an attempt to pass that legislation quickly in January to show that they are serious about legislating. Now, much of it's not going to go anywhere because, as we talked about earlier, you have a Republican-controlled Senate that's going to be unwilling to advance it. At the same time, you have a whole other group of Democrats, committee chairmen and others, who have subpoena power and will likely do exactly what you're talking about, which is obstruct, try to stymie, investigate, slow down, and basically disrupt the lives of anybody who works in the Trump administration. And I think you'll see plenty of that. We certainly saw plenty of that when Republicans took control of Congress when President Obama was in the White House. And I think the Democrats will follow a similar playbook. Whether or not Trump can, you know, adopt a warlike posture, as he's said, and dissuade Democrats from doing that is something that we'll just have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I have this correct, someone from the Daily Signal got embedded in the caravan.
We have, yeah. So we're closely following the situation. The caravan making its way through Central America was stopped in Mexico City last week, and we had a couple of our colleagues from the Heritage Foundation and Nolan Peterson, who is our foreign correspondent,
yeah,
normally based in Europe. Nolan has done some outstanding reporting from the front lines in Europe, particularly with a war between Ukraine and Russia. And so he's a military veteran and spent some time with the people who were making their way north. And they are making their way. You know, the big takeaways from Nolan's reporting, and he'll have a story on the Daily Signal this week about it, they are being fed a lot of misinformation. As we know, based on following the news here, Mexico has offered them asylum, has offered to help a lot of these migrants who are making the trip. They are being told – they're not being told about the steps that the United States is taking once they reach the border and some of the changes. President Trump just announced some changes to asylum last week, for instance, and they continue to make the trip. So there are some organizers who appear to be politically motivated and want to use these migrants as pawns in their larger game. And I think it's unfortunate because a lot of them are trying to escape a terrible situation back in their home country, but don't necessarily qualify for asylum purely on those economic grounds.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be one of the things that we enjoy doing best is getting out of Washington and telling the story directly from the ground. And that's what we hope to do in this case.
Yeah. Now, Rob, the fire that's been going on in Southern California, that is now, I think, going to be ranked as the single deadliest fire in state history. And I think there's 42 lives lost. And the amount of destruction that's gone on, it's burned nearly 150 square miles. What other reporting news do you have on that?
It's certainly devastating, and there's been more news coming out of Washington today as members of Congress and the Trump administration look for what opportunities they have to help contribute and fight this fire. I mean, I think first and foremost, I just want to say, our prayers are with all those families who've lost loved ones or who continue to be in harm's way and are trying to flee and escape. And of course, a lot of credit goes to the first responders and the firefighters who are doing that work. There are certainly both policy changes that I think the state of California could make when it comes to forest management. You've seen President Trump tweet and make comments in the last few days about changes he'd like to see made on that level. And then, of course, there is the help that the Congress might be able to provide through resources to help the recovery. But certainly a tough situation there, and we continue to follow it closely. And I expect that, like any natural disaster that we have, Washington is always looking for opportunities to help. One other thing that I'll mention is we recently had the opportunity again to send a Daily Signal reporting team to South Carolina in the aftermath of the hurricane there. And just to observe the tremendous work of a nonprofit organization, Samaritan's Purse, there are others like it who really step in. And this is what's great about the American people is they turn to these Christian-based organizations and churches to provide that support because government doesn't have all the answers or the resources to do everything. And so I think some of those first responders really are coming at it from a belief in their role in this larger world that we live in.
I love it. Rob Bluey is my guest. We'll take a very short break, and when we come back, lots more with Rob in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Rob Bluey. He's the editor-in-chief for the Daily Signal, regular guest on Tuesday, and he lives in Washington, D.C., so he always is up to date on what's going on in that town. So, Rob, as I think of the gun control issue, which is not going away anytime soon, I was watching some football, I guess, a couple weekends ago, and every ad I saw was some trailer for a movie loaded with gun violence, and it seems that Hollywood in particular are the ones that always are saying that we've got to do something about guns, yet they continue to make movies all day long with guns in them.
You're absolutely right. I mean, this is something that's long been shown as a hypocrisy from Hollywood, where you have a number of actors who speak out in support of restrictions on the Second Amendment and that would affect law-abiding citizens. You know, we've talked about this on the show in the past, and I think that the solutions aren't necessarily going to come from Washington, because in Washington, the rhetoric is often about banning guns and taking away rights, and when in reality there are some other steps that can be taken. There are mental health challenges, for instance. I think that in the most recent example in Thousand Oaks, California, the person who carried out the shooting was suffering from PTSD, and we've seen in numerous cases how, again, support for people who are struggling with some of these problems can be a way to prevent the violence. At the same time, I mean, I think that there are steps that the communities can take. I know that their schools have looked for innovative approaches that they can employ to be more creative in how they stop these terrible acts from being carried out. But at the same time, as I just mentioned, one of the top priorities of Democrats taking control of the House will be something to do with guns. They believe that was a mandate that they were sent to Washington to address. The Democrats in the early 1990s, when Bill Clinton was president, took it upon themselves to pass the assault weapons ban. They were subsequently routed in the next election. So I think it's an issue that Americans on both sides of the issue care deeply about.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I would love for you to talk about the election in Florida, in Arizona, where they're recounting votes. Help me understand, do they call these races too early? They say, okay, we've got a winner, and he's ahead by 71,000 votes. And then they demand the recall, and all of a sudden, hey, we just found a box with 650,000 votes in it, in somebody's trunk. And then all of a sudden, things get turned around. And what's wrong with this process?
There has to be a better way to do this. I mean, I don't understand how. So in the Arizona election, let's take that one first. The candidates, the race was just called yesterday. I mean, basically a week after the voting, we finally got a decision. I don't know what the in some cases what the delays are. I can understand if it's a really close race. This one didn't end up turning out to be all that close at the end. But on Tuesday, when people went to bed, and even on Wednesday, the Republican was leading, and then that flipped. When as you say, votes came in from a particular county, and then it changed. The same thing was true in Montana. People went to bed on Tuesday night with the Republican leading, woke up Wednesday morning with the Republican leading, and then, sure enough, John Tester emerges victorious. Florida is just baffling to me because you had so many news organizations call that race for Ron DeSantis. In fact, you had so many people doing that that the Democrat for running for governor, Andrew Gillum, conceded the election. He placed a phone call and acknowledged it was over. Now he's unconceded. That same thing didn't happen in the Senate race, where you had a closer margin. But yes, they are going to recount. I think it's good that every vote should be counted. But yeah, I would think that here we are in the year 2018. We should have a better way of figuring out how to vote. You look at solutions that other states have employed. Maybe there are some answers there. I don't know what your situation is like. We used to have electronic voting in Virginia. Now we're back to the paper ballot, and we scan it in like we used to our tests in high school.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know. I don't know what the best method of voting is, but it seems that we need to restore confidence in the process because what we're seeing in Florida has Republicans and Democrats throwing their hands up, thinking that one side's not getting a fair deal.
Yeah. Now, when you live in the news world, there is obviously going to be information that just isn't accurate, and sometimes you go, "Well, how did they come up with that story?" I was looking at something online yesterday. It was the Oakland Tribune, Monday evening edition, April 15th, 1912. And it said, "Titanic's sinking. All aboard are rescued."
Yeah. So you're saying that fake news goes back quite a while.
Well, that's probably just bad information. That
True.
Probably wasn't intentional. Things have changed, of course, but there has been a lot of outrage against fake news, and obviously you don't want stories made up, but they've been around for a long time.
Definitely, and this is why I think one of the best antidotes is for our readers at the Daily Signal, your listeners on Faith Radio, to rely on multiple sources of information. I mean, I am so appreciative of those letters that we get at the Daily Signal from people telling us how much they value the reporting that we do, and they rely on us for their news and information. But at the same time, we're limited in what we can do. We have a small team here. We cover, policy and politics, and we don't cover a lot of the other cultural issues and certainly local news stories. So I think that this speaks to the importance. We live in a time when it's so easy to access a number of sources of information for our news. And even if you are a conservative, making sure that you're reading what liberals might be writing about, I think that helps. We can all get in our filter bubbles, and then this is where sometimes we create these challenges for ourselves because we don't necessarily have multiple sources that we're relying on for information. And as we see local newspapers, I got my start working for a weekly newspaper that no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what the challenges are, particularly at the local level. And so it does become more challenging. And as the news becomes more, as we consume news in different ways, like through Facebook and Twitter, we have a tendency to maybe associate with people who have the same beliefs as us. And that's fine. But at the same time, I think we owe it to ourselves to try to get news from different places.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I'd love for you to comment on the episode between Jim Acosta and the president from two standpoints. One, is it good reporting to address the president the way he did? And then the second question is, if you're a colleague sitting next to him, and you've got your question you'd like to ask, is he being fair with the other colleagues?
Well, so I will preface this by saying that I've never been able to sit in the White House briefing room and ask questions of the press secretary. So I try to put myself in that circumstance and understand it. My colleague Fred Lucas does. He's our Daily Signal correspondent there at the White House. So to answer your first question, I think that he was out of line in terms of how he addressed the president. I think that showed a lack of respect and decorum for the office and the situation that he was in. And I think that there's enough of a history there with this particular reporter, Jim Acosta, that we know that sometimes he seems to be he seems to relish being part of the story rather than just being the person who's representing his network and the people in terms of trying to get the story. If I was a reporter, I would be annoyed because I feel that it creates a hostile environment in which, the president who's been giving most recently incredible access to these White House correspondents to ask questions. I mean, he spent significantly more time last Wednesday answering questions than Obama did after his first midterm election. And so, if you're the president, you really can't win. You spend time with them, and then they criticize your answers and your behavior toward the reporters. If you spend not as much time, they say you're not giving them the access that they need. So I think that Trump, he certainly has he's not going to just take it. He's going to have that straight talk back to them. Would I like to see him change a little bit? Certainly, I think he could probably be a little bit more polite in terms of his answers. But I think that that's one of the things that the American people like about him, that he is willing to stand up and speak his mind. And if he doesn't like the way that he's being treated or he doesn't want to answer the question, he'll be blunt and just tell you. He's not going to give you a typical political answer that you'll get from so many people in Washington.
Yeah. So, Rob, I know yesterday we observed Veterans Day. What is it like in Washington, D.C. on Veterans Day?
Yeah, well, so certainly we didn't have the parade.
Yeah, okay.
Remember that President Trump
Very
wanted
expensive.
A big parade.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. There was some local opposition to doing that. I personally think it would be a terrific thing to have a parade. I mean, I grew up going to parades in my small town, marched in some of them when I was in the high school band. So I think it's a great patriotic thing for us to do and to celebrate our veterans and our military. But what is Washington, D.C. like? I mean, Washington, D.C. is a ghost town because all of the government buildings are closed.
Right.
Obviously, some businesses are working. But I think that more importantly, there are events that take place like at Arlington National Cemetery at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, which is just I took our children there earlier this year, and it was just a tremendous experience for them to see that ceremony take place, which is open every day. So, I mean, if you have listeners who are visiting Washington, I strongly encourage them to visit Arlington National Cemetery. But it's a great time to remember the sacrifices of our veterans and those who are increasingly of a smaller percentage of Americans who spend time in the U.S. military.
Yeah. Rob, one last question. You said you marched in the band. What instrument did you play?
I was a percussionist. So
oh, cool.
I often was carrying a drum or cymbals or something of that nature.
You were making noise.
And, making a lot of noise,
okay.
Exactly.
All right. Rob Blue has been my guest, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Thanks to Rob Bluey, my Washington, D.C. correspondent. I always enjoy talking to him. Now my guest, Jeff Myers, Dr. Jeff Myers, is every time I get a chance to talk with him, I always get out a fresh piece of paper and a pen because I take lots of notes when it comes to anything regarding Christian worldview or apologetics or youth leadership. Jeff is the guy to go to, and he's written a book called The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, Overcoming the Outbreak of Five Fatal Worldviews. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, Bill. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah.
We should probably clarify that if you're driving around right now, don't get out a piece of paper.
No, that's just for me. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm doing taking the
Everybody
notes.
Everybody else can just hold the information in their heads.
Yes, yes. So I'm paging through your book, and you say bad ideas are like viruses.
Yeah, it's an interesting analogy that we've been developing here at Summit, because for so many years we've wondered, why is it that the young adults we're working with seem more and more susceptible to what the culture is saying?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they have a resistance to it?
No kidding.
Well, when you think of viruses as being, as ideas, bad ideas traveling like viruses, it can be helpful. Like a virus is, you know, an unusual kind of infection because it's not, strictly speaking, alive to begin with, right? It's mm-hmm. just a bit of protein coding a bit of genetic code that weaves itself into the body's structure, reproduces itself, and then begins to take over the body. And you can have a virus that's latent in your body for a very long time. And in a time of great stress or being unhealthy, it can really rear up with a vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think bad ideas are like viruses. We're surrounded by them all of the time. Even advertising, the average person sees 3,000 commercial messages a day. The average person is online 2 or 3 hours a day. They're watching television a little bit less, but it's being replaced by social media.
Mm-hmm.
And we're constantly being surrounded by ideas. And how are we supposed to think all of this through? And what do we even believe, right? I mean, do people put on Facebook what they really believe, or do they put on Facebook what they think that the people who they think are watching should think they should think if they were thinking? I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
but
bring that sentence in for a fitting. I'll have it back for you by Thursday.
But we want to be well thought of by the people who we want to think well of us. That's a very natural human reaction. And so we can pick up ideas and transmit them. You know, I hate to think of it, but there are a lot of times I've picked up a cold, and there are probably a lot of times where I've picked up a cold and handed it to somebody else
sure.
and didn't take it myself.
Sure. This projecting the image you would like to let other people see has become a cultural trend, a pastime, a new sport. I mean, people seem to be obsessed with letting people know just what's going on in their world, whether it's true or not.
It's interesting how much of it could be true. I'm starting work on a book right now on truth, which will be interesting. Because it won't come out for 2 more years, and I'm just wondering what the battle will be like. But Bill, I read a study that said that only 10% of people say that they're lying on their social media, but 90% of them thought that other people were lying on their social media. Well, what you accuse other people of is probably what you're guilty of yourself, right? So, you know, that's really the truth is. We give snapshots of our lives, and we craft a narrative that may or may not be real. But I don't know. How is that unfair?
No.
That's a tough one, right? Because if I feel really horrible and I have a cold, I'm probably not going to take a picture of myself on that day looking
miserable
with circles under my eyes. I'm probably going to wait until, you know, I'm in the sunshine and I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
And then I'll take a picture, send that.
I probably shouldn't have put on my Facebook page that the Yankees were thinking about having me as their new relief pitcher for next season. Probably a mistake.
I heard that they picked you up and 3 catchers to be named later.
Yeah, exactly. So it is. The word is out. Okay. Now, you do say that Christianity is affected through bad ideas, and you've nailed it down to 5 particular worldviews: secularism, Marxism, Islam, new spirituality, and postmodernism. Can we talk a little bit about each of those?
Yeah, I'm happy to. And I love to think about this because it's not that complicated, but it is more complicated than just either you're a Christian or you're an atheist. The world is not really like that. It's not just one belief or the other. People who don't embrace Christianity typically fall into one of these 5 other viewpoints. Secularism, which says that only the material world exists or is relevant. That if God's really there, it doesn't really matter because we have to solve all of our own problems for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Marxism, which says that everything bad that happens is the fault of rich people who arrange things to keep themselves in power, and they need to have that power stripped away from them by having money stripped away from them. You have the new spiritualist worldview that says that everything that exists is one thing; it's all just one organism. everything in the universe is one thing. And if we have the illusion that we're somehow separate, that's just an illusion. That reality is there is no material world in the way we think of it. And then you have the postmodern view, which says that all of the other groups are just giving their viewpoint in order to try to get power over you. You really shouldn't believe anything at all, right? Like the song by Queen, there's a biopic out right now about Freddie Mercury, the lead singer for Queen, and their most famous song, which sold millions and millions of copies, basically comes to this conclusion, nothing really matters. Nothing really matters to me. That's the postmodern view. And so anyway, you take those different views and put them together, and you realize, you know, Islam obviously is a big belief system. People don't typically convert to Islam in free countries unless, you know, they only are converting to Islam if they have to, in order to try to, you know, stay on the right side of things in a country where it's an overwhelming, where Islam is an overwhelming presence. But it's still a worldview that more and more people are embracing. And I'll tell you, Bill, we did a study. Did I tell you about this last time I was on the show? We did a study with the Barner Research Group.
Just the 3%?
Asking, yeah, we found that over 50% of millennials, they somewhat agreed with principles of Islam.
Yeah.
The Christian young people in churches have a worldview that's largely Islamic as well as much as it is Christian. So, yeah, these are big, big ideas out there, and they are taking people captive left and right.
Uh-huh. And that's, again, what their itching ears want to hear.
It is, yeah. And, you know, you think, well, how do you know what is true? Well, it's true if it makes sense to me, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we've made ourselves the arbiter of what is true and untrue. It's not whether we're tuned in to accurately perceive what really is there. It's that there is nothing there except for what I say there is. That is a major, major cultural shift. And unfortunately for the church, that it has captivated so many young people. And everybody listening right now, you've got a name and a face right now when I say this. Young people who just grew up in the church, seem solid in their faith, and then for no apparent reason walked away. And you're thinking, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening. What's going to happen to them in this life? What's going to happen to them after they die? This is a horrible tragedy, Bill. And it's happening because I think Christians haven't learned to really have the mind of Christ about the big ideas that are influencing people in our day. If a young person comes to church, do they know better how to have discussions about truth around the water cooler in a way that sounds reasonable? You know, that's the sort of thing that we at Summit are really, really focused on.
Mm. So interesting, Jeff. You know, if the premise is that I am the highest authority in my life, accountable to no one, then you're pretty susceptible to any one of these five different worldviews you just suggested, and you probably will gravitate towards one of them.
You would probably gravitate toward one, exactly. So if you're kind of a pessimist by nature, you might gravitate to postmodernism. If you're kind of angry by nature, you might gravitate toward Marxism or socialism. Uh-huh. But each person is going to it is hard to stay true to what you know. G.K. Chesterton said there are many angles at which a man may fall, but only one at which he may stand.
Yeah, I love this research from Barna. This is stunning to me. 3% of American evangelicals have an authentic biblical worldview. That's the tiniest percent ever.
Yeah, it's gone up and down for years, but it's at a very low point right now. And I think every one of us in Sunday schools and churches, pastors, we want to be asking the question, all right, not that we haven't been loving or we haven't been trying. We've been working really, really hard to serve people and to disciple them. But what might we do if we know we also need to help them learn how their biblical worldview applies to every area of life? You know, is it going to make people angry that we talk about history and sociology and biology and politics and all of that in church because it's relevant to what God cares about, thinks about? And if it's going to be tough, how do we do that? How do we have those conversations? How do we set people up so that they can discuss the truth so that they're not taken captive by error?
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to Dr. Jeff Myers. He's written a book called The Secret Battle of Ideas About God. Everything Jeff does is just superb. It's well thought out and beautifully constructed. And you say, Jeff, in your book that you have a person that has a story that particularly impacted you about your faith. Would you tell our listeners about that?
Well, I tried to fill the book with a lot of the stories. Are you referring to the one about the founder of Summit, about David Noble?
Yes.
Yeah, I had, as a 17-year-old, decided that I would graduate from high school and graduate from church at the same time because I wasn't getting answers to my questions.
Yeah.
I will grant you my questions were obnoxious, but they were sincere. I really wanted to know, how do we really know there is a God? How do we know that God is the way he's described in the Bible? What about other religions? What about other cultures? What about people who were born other places? I had all kinds of questions. So my parents arranged for me to come from our small town, small church, to Summit Ministries, and I met David Noble, the founder. And I said to him, I hope you have a lot of answers because I have a lot of questions. And I look back at that and think, how could I have been more rude? How could I have been more confrontational as a 17-year-old kid to this brilliant philosopher?
Yeah.
He did not take offense. He just said, at Summit, we aren't afraid of any of the questions. That's what I needed to hear. I didn't need somebody to tell me, hey, look, kid, don't worry, we got it all covered. I wanted somebody to say, we know there are big questions out there, and we're going to walk alongside of you as you find answers that are based on and consistent with what God says in a special revelation of Scripture. And that began a journey for me that led to, a few years ago, my having the opportunity to become president of the very ministry that had such a powerful influence on my own life.
See, I love great stories like this. I really do. I can't get enough of these. So, Jeff,
well,
if you don't...
Well, Bill, we need this summer, we're having these 12-day programs for young adults that are a lot like the one that I attended, but with speakers who address today's big issues. And students will learn, how do you have a biblical view of identity up against gender dysphoria? They will learn, why should we embrace free markets instead of socialism? Why should we respect the Constitution? What is the Constitution? You know, how do we understand the value of life when it comes – when we say we're pro-life, what do we mean?
Mm-hmm.
All of those kinds of issues – and just all of that instruction together with making friends and having mentors and small groups, it's profoundly life-changing for people, and it's still available. In fact, we've got, I think, 9 different two-week sessions set up for this coming summer, and at summit.org, you can find out all the information. So
yeah.
How's that? I had to throw that in there.
No, I love you did that. I love that you did that because you're so right. Those kinds of trips, because, you know, you've got your summer vacation – why not spend 2 weeks of it at a Summit conference where you can have life-changing experiences and you can get grounded and equipped as you go on to your next venture at college?
Let me throw out an idea I've been thinking about, Bill, just to see if this makes any sense. You know, when you go to church, you can learn a lot. I learn a lot. I like to take notes. And I feel like I can learn so much in a sermon or in a Sunday school class that I double in my knowledge of that topic in one day, right? So, and if I go to a weekend conference, it's 2 days long. I can double the first day, and then I can double again the second day. So I know 4 times as much as I did about that topic, right?
Yes.
So imagine that I had $1 and I did a one-day experience, doubled it, so I'd have $2. I went to a weekend conference, I have $4. Do you know how many dollars you would have if you doubled it every day for 12 days?
I hate math questions.
$2,048.
Wow.
You know, so a lot of people have said 12 days, that is a lot of time. Well, it just depends on how many times you want to double in your knowledge of your faith and your ability to really lead in the times in which we live. It's a profound life-shaping thing in 12 days.
Yeah, and I love when people tell stories about, I remember that summer when I got out of high school and I went, and they talk about these camps that they went to and these conferences they went to, and they're still profoundly life-changing, even to the, 20, 30 years later.
I think that is so cool. And yeah. I think that's what it's designed to be. It's planting a flag in a way, saying, this is important to me, and I don't understand everything about it, but I will commit to Jesus, and I want other people to come and know him.
Yeah, and not to mention it's in Colorado, right?
That doesn't hurt, right?
Yeah, you got sunscreen there and stuff.
Three great locations now, but I'm actually in the Colorado location right now, so I sit here in my office and look right out at our little town. I'm tucked in between two mountain ranges.
You're trying to hurt me right now?
Yeah, it's a stunning place. I'm trying to hurt you.
Yeah, well, it's working.
And it's sunny here. It's 50 degrees.
All right, let me take a quick break. Dr. Jeff Myers is my guest. 12 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Back to the show. It's 10 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Jeff Myers is my guest. He's written a book called Don't Let the Secret Battle of Ideas About God, Overcoming the Outbreak of Five Fatal Worldviews. Here's a line from your book or a chapter title or a paragraph title. I've already lost my place as I was paging through it. Counterfeit worldviews lead to counterfeit healing. Explain that, Dr. Mm-hmm. Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Well, If you believe, say, a secular worldview that only the material world exists, that there's no God, there's no Jesus, there's no Holy Spirit, no heaven, no hell, there might be, but if there is, it's not relevant to anything that's really important. Then where do you turn when you need answers to questions like, am I loved? Because if a secular worldview is true, then there really is no such thing as love. There's just sexual chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you turn if you need answers to questions like, what is my purpose? Why am I here? Why does my life matter? If I were to disappear, would anybody even care? Then you end up with something like what Richard Dawkins says, DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music.
Mm.
If you have questions like, why can't we get along? I mean, you look at the whole world. The entire history, the written human history goes back, 3,000-something years. Only 268 of those years have been completely at peace. Our history, 92% of our history is of warfare in the world. And then we know how angry we get if somebody cuts us off in traffic, or mm-hmm. How irritated we get at those we love, and we wonder, why can't we get along? Well, how do you answer that from a secular worldview? The answer is, it's power. You have to collect power unto yourself so that you can be invulnerable to whatever somebody might do. And you end up going the opposite direction of where healing is found in Jesus and end up being in more despair than you were in before. I think that's true with these five counterfeit worldviews, with all of them. Now, I'm not saying that the people who believe those worldviews aren't sincere. I'm not even saying that they're not good people. Many of them I would love to have as neighbors. But I am saying that they will be misled, and they will in turn mislead other people when it comes to finding the kind of peace with God that is only offered through Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, comment about the way the word love has been hijacked today, where you did make reference to it, meaning, right now we think of it in terms of, physical chemistry, but, the whole, then people talk about God, my God's a God of love. And I always think that what price did your God pay? Love is when you go to the cross and die for sins, and then that's love.
Yeah. It's easier to understand if you look at what love meant in the original language in which the New Testament was written, which is called Koine Greek. It's an ancient form of Greek. And in that language, people were more descriptive about certain things. They didn't just say, oh, I love this. I love my mom. I love steak. Right? Mm-hmm. They had ways of distinguishing what they were referring to. One common kind of love was eros love, which is sexual love. Another common kind of love was philos, which is brotherly love or familial love. Mm-hmm. And the kind of love Jesus spoke of is specifically referred to with a rarely used word. And this is until the disciples wrote about this. It's the word agape. It means unselfish, unconditional love. It means loving someone in spite of their unlovability. That's the kind of love that Jesus alone offers. You know, even when there are people I love and who I know love me, and I tell them I love you, and they tell me they love me. But I do know, to a certain extent, they love me because of what I can do for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how I make them feel or the way I provide for them. And it's true on the other side as well. Only Jesus offers that completely unconditional love that allows us to answer the question, am I loved for who I am and not just what I can do for people?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus is the one who can answer that question. He's the only one who can answer that question.
Yeah. Jeff, your book, The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, do you have a target audience in mind for this book?
I wrote the book for moms and dads. I know most of my work is with young adults, but because of the success of the Summit program and the lives of young people, these 12-day programs that I talked about earlier, we thought, no, this I think gives us some credibility to help moms and dads work with their kids. So I imagined, it seems unfair, but I thought, you know, I want to write the book so that if there's a 40-year-old mom who wants to read a few pages before she goes to sleep at night, she's not going to be able to put the book down.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way the stories flow and the suspense of it and what she's learning about the world her kids face will be that compelling, and that she'll be able to see and communicate about the message of Jesus's worldview.
Yeah.
To her own children.
Jeff, just a couple of minutes left, and we talk about bad ideas are like a virus. Is it ever going to be possible to fully rid our minds of bad ideas?
Well, that's the beauty of the analogy of a virus. Sadly, no, you can't kill it. If it's not alive, you can't kill it.
Okay.
So you can't just put antibacterial lotion on your kids, you know, and expect that they won't be able to pick up bad ideas. They're going to pick them up. But you can identify what those bad ideas are. Then you can isolate where they influence. Then you can begin to inform people, and your children especially, about what these ideas are and what they say and why they're wrong. And then ultimately you can invest in those who get sick. If you get sick with a virus, you know, hopefully those who love you will come alongside of you. They don't want to catch the virus from you, but they also understand, yeah, you can't kill this. You can't take, you know, so you can't take a antibacterial medicine and stop it. You have to just keep your body strong long enough to fight it off.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take all four of those things, Bill, and put them together, yes, it is possible to fight off these bad ideas. They will always be with us, but we are not always – that doesn't mean we have to be victims of them.
Yeah. Quick question. Snow in Colorado yet?
Yeah, we've had a fair bit of snow here. We had a foot here in Manitou Springs on Sunday, which is really nice. The ski resorts are open, which everybody's thrilled about.
Yeah,
which probably explains why there aren't very many people in my office today. I thought about that until just now.
Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Just everybody come to summit.org, and let's just stay in touch. Let's be friends, okay?
Fantastic. Dr. Jeff Myers has been my guest again. Summit.org is where you can check out his website. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.